Live from the Ghost Hunter Store, brought to you by the Shadowlands, South Jersey Ghost Research, and the Ghost Hunter Store. Here's some paranormal straight talk with your hosts, Dave Giuliano and Marty Haynes.
Hi everyone, welcome to the show. This is our second broadcast, and we still had a few kinks to work out, so we're going to join the interview in progress already. Our guest this week was Dusty Smith, president and founder of the Daytona Beach Paranormal Research Group, Incorporated.
Runs out of Flamel University.
Yeah, and actually, that was the second one I took. The first one I took, you know, and I don't want to say I'm any smarter than anybody else or, you know, whatever, but this course that was supposed to take you 6 months, I blew through in 3.5 hours. And the part about animal spirits was a couple of paragraphs on the person who wrote the course's pet had passed away, and the neighbor heard barking the next day. I was like, what? It was a total waste of money, total waste of time. And if anybody, if any of your listeners wants to know, email me and I'll tell you which course that was. I just don't want to, you know, be rude over the air. But Troy's course was great because not only did you have, you know, the books and a guy you could call if you had any questions, but he made you do a case. You know, he didn't say go into somebody's house and, you know, test the waters. He said, you know, go to a known public location and do a case. Find out the background. Find out the history. You know, the whole nine yards. And he didn't care if it wound up being haunted or not. He just wanted to make sure that you knew what you were doing before you went out there. And if you didn't do, you know, dot your I's and cross your T's, you didn't get that piece of paper. There is another one very similar to his, and I think the guy that originally worked with him kind of branched off. It's through Flamel College. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, Lloyd Aubach has one that's, like, very intense. But he's a little selective about who he allows to take his course, which I think is a little funny, but whatever.
Parapsychologists, too. They're not.
But, yeah, you know, it's one of those things. I mean, like you were saying, you're not going to watch, you know, a show like This Old House and start knocking out load-bearing walls in your house to put in a window. You know, you just don't do that. And it's the same with this field.
Unfortunately, I see this every day through you know, calls we get for assistance with equipment and things like that. And it's, you know exactly where they've gotten their information.
You can, oh, yeah.
It's narrowed down what show they watched the night before. And it's... You know, and there, I've had, you know, probably a few heated conversations with some people that might not be customers ever again. But they were buying this stuff. They watched a show and then they were going right into a private house.
Like oh, and just for clarification purposes, with television, I don't have television. I've been boycotting the cable company for 14 years. Stupidly, I had actually saw the pilot episode. For the Ghost Edward Devers, those guys. And it was actually a pretty good show. They had, you know, good information, good history. They got some awesome, you know, documentation. And then I got a call. We want to do a show in St. Augustine. Will you help us out? Sure, no problem. I get up there and I was like, why am I putting my name to this? These guys were so far out in left field. I like shudder every time somebody says, oh, I saw you on that show. I go, it wasn't me, swear. You know, but we all make mistakes, unfortunately. But I can't even imagine, you know, you running the store, you know, people coming in and, you know, plunking down anywhere from $40,000 to $4,000 going, yeah, I watched this show and I'm going to plug in this, you know, system and we're going to, you know, I just, I don't know. The world's a funny place.
It's amazing just the mindset of the people that think that it's that simple. Anyway, enough beating up the people.
Yeah, thanks. I'm good at that.
Tell me about the store down there, because I've only been to Daytona once.
Mm-hmm.
I was only there for a day, so I didn't get a chance to do anything down there, but I'm going to hit the beach, where I almost got run over by the go-karts that I drive on the beach. I'm from New Jersey.
Oh, yeah.
No driving on beaches.
Yes, there is.
Well, it just depends on where you are. You don't have to worry about them getting run over coming out of the water, so.
Yeah, we have it all. You know, driving on the beach, sharks, jellyfish, riptides, you know.
Yeah.
Well, all that fun stuff.
So you guys are the original tour down in that area.
Yes.
Is that based on places you've investigated yourself?
Yeah, we actually were lucky enough. The gentleman that was the caretaker for Pinewood Cemetery allowed us in at night to document some of these hauntings that we kept hearing about. And, you know, it was funny because, you know, most people don't associate Daytona Beach with being haunted. You know, it's NASCAR, it's bike week, it's spring break, it's the beach, you know. And I had been that way too. And finally, Karen Harvey, the historian in St. Augustine, said, you know, why do you guys keep coming up here and documenting our stuff? Doesn't Daytona have any ghosts? And I went, oh, yeah, let's check that out, you know. And Howard Wetherill was just phenomenal. Basically, he gave us the keys to the kingdom. I mean, this cemetery is so haunted, and I really don't like publicizing things like that because, you know, the vandalism and stuff goes up, and, of course, the trespassing, you know, with ghost hunters and things, but this one is so public. It's right in the center of town, across from bars that are open till, you know, 3 a.m. So I don't really worry about it. Plus, doing the tour there every night, you know, gives us an advantage as well. But the really cool thing about it is, over the years of doing the tour, besides the fact that we documented these original, you know, what we thought originally were folklore tales, have found several other hauntings. And it just amazes me that the more we do the tour, the more these other spirits come out and go, hey, I'm here, you know. And I feel bad for some of them because, you know, they're, of course, intelligent hauntings and they're stuck, and we have tried to help them, you know, cross over, but at the same time, it's like they don't want to go, and it's a double-edged sword. You know, of course, we want to make money for the cemetery through doing the tour, but at the same time, it's like this 8-year-old boy is stuck here, you know, and he's hitting the fence for us every night and, you know, talking to us, and he don't want to go, you know, so it's like, what do? You know, I don't know. Some people think I'm mean, but
you have done some spirit rescues on some of them.
I'm sorry, say that again.
You have done some spirit rescues on some of the spirits.
Oh yeah. There were a couple that there was no way I was going to include them in the tour. We had one young lady that she had been, lack of a better term, she had been gang raped and then murdered. And there was no way I was going to include her story or her spirit. And we went into the cemetery and did a really nice ceremony. And you could feel that she had stopped being angry, that she had, you know, kind of calmed down. And we actually found two of the people that were involved in the crime and brought them to justice through that. another lady's husband had murdered her, and no one knew this. For 47 years, nobody knew that she was murdered. They just thought, you know, I don't know, she had a stroke or something in the middle of the night, and he, you know, buried her out back. And when through doing the tour, the folks that owned their house, we were talking about it, and she says, oh, my gosh, we've got this stuff going on, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So we went and did the investigation, and I said, have you guys ever been in this attic? It doesn't look like anybody's ever been in here. And she said, no, not since we, you know, moved in. So we went in the attic, and we found journals from this lady's husband, and they actually charged him posthumously and found him guilty of murder. So it was kind of cool, and of course we helped her as well. It's not always an easy thing to do. Sometimes they just don't want to go.
Yeah, they still have the free will.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Convince them that.
Which is this 8-year-old boy. I love him to death. He thinks I'm his mother or something, you know. But at the same time, you know, it hurts. I want him to be at rest, and he don't want to go.
I really have to say this, and I hope there's other people that get to hear this, you know, that run historic tours or are thinking about doing it, that just the integrity that you had to not, you know, abuse and, I guess, use those spirits.
Yeah,
just
to,
and
oh,
know,
thank you.
Money on that, and because you cared more about their well-being than, you know, just having another part to the tour. That's an uncommon thing. You don't hear too much of that.
Thank you. I appreciate it. A lot of people don't understand that. My son's always kidding with me because, you know, the tours and the research group and the cemeteries and everything. Mom, you're always playing with dead stuff. And it's like, you know, I don't know if it's living in Florida or me just getting jaded the older I get, but you know what? I'd rather hang out with them.
Yeah, I can understand that totally, too. Sometimes the dead are more interesting than the living.
Yeah, exactly. No offense to the living.
Through the webpage, I kind of lost track of how many books you have.
Oh, geez.
I see I got Haunted Daytona Beach. Now, was that the first one?
Actually, no. Dread and the Dead Filled the Dunham House, which I did not choose that title. That was the first one. That was about the demonic case we worked, that you helped us with. Then came Haunted Daytona and Haunted DeLand. And I just got today, Joanne Austin did a new compilation, which I wrote a chapter for about one of our cases. Personally, I've written 41 books. 3 have been traditionally published so far. And then, oh gosh, we've been in chapters in so many people's books. Jeff Bellinger, Dan Asfar, Brad Steiger, Troy Taylor, his new one, Dead Men Talking. The list just, you know, goes on and on.
Yeah, I always like to collect the books that we get mentioned in and stuff. It's fun.
Yeah, I love to write.
Marty had a question. I was going to see if you can hear her.
Okay.
Coloring books and activity books for children with activities. Can you tell me how you got involved in doing the children's stuff?
I'm sorry, she's breaking up.
Let's switch headsets. I'll take the questions here for this. She was doing some research of her own, looking through, and she said she found there was a coloring activity book for children.
Yes. actually, I have a couple of nieces and nephews, and I had messed up my knee real bad. And I thought, wow, you know, how can I get them to not be afraid of this part of our natural world? You know, they were real little at the time. So I just put together this kind of fun, you know, it's a coloring book. And then there's things that they can draw and make bookmarkers and, you know, little word search puzzles and things like that. So they got a kick out of it. And we basically give them out on the tour, you know, to little kids. You know, we'll see that they're a little bit nervous. You know, and I'll say, if you make it through my tour without being scared, I'll give you a surprise at the end. And they, oh, okay, you know. And then they start getting into it. And, you know, at the end of the tour, we'll throw them one of the coloring books, and they just think that's the best, you know.
And you also have a book on paganism, too?
Yeah. I actually have a PhD in theology, but I studied, you know, comparative religion. And again, I thought, you know, there's so many people out there that, you know, they're slapping a pentacle around their neck and, you know, wearing all cotton clothes and, you know, becoming, I don't know, vegetarian or something, going, yeah, I'm pagan, you know, and it's like, no, you know. So I basically wrote couple of books on, look, this is the how-tos. This is the way that, you know, years ago, the Druids and, you know, all of that did this stuff. And it's not just hugging a tree every other week and, you know, walking outside when it's the full moon. There's a lot involved to it. It's a very involved spirituality. You know, and it's not devil worship or anything like that. It's has to do with the earth and the phases of the moon and things like that.
And we've always had, in our group anyway, we've had a variety. I like to keep a lot of different points of view in. And we've had pagans, we've had Wiccans at any given time. And I, because it only adds to the, I think, the strength of the group. And there are different people from different belief systems are going to see different points of view.
Exactly. And, you know, one of the things I learned pretty early on, you know, was when you're working a case and you've got an intelligent haunting. Here in Florida, we deal with a lot of Native American spirits. And I think the reason for this is this was the last stand for them. The Seminole Indians were the last ones. They never gave over, you know. They were like, look, this is it, you know. And they gave the Europeans a lot of trouble. And the statistic is that 5,000 years ago, there were more Native Americans living along the I-4 corridor, which cuts from Daytona Beach to Tampa, than there are people living in the state of Florida today. That's a lot of people that lived and died here. And the problem is that these spirits get stuck, as we all know. So if you walk into a home that was built on, doesn't necessarily have to be sacred Native American ground, it could have been, you know, where their lodge was or something like that. And if you're dealing with a Native American spirit, you can't walk in there with rosary beads and holy water. This person, this spirit, has no clue what that is. So, like you said, you really have to have people that are knowledgeable in every spirituality, from, you know, Native American shamanism to Judaism, paganism, Catholicism, you know, you've got to have all of that.
That's so true, and that's one of the big downfalls of a lot of the groups that we encounter, some of the locally. They try to impress their belief system upon the client that they're dealing with, and to me, just exercising basic common sense would tell you that that's not the right thing to do.
Exactly.
Belief system, and I think you just reminded me. I'm pretty sure this is going back probably about 9 years or so. I'm pretty sure I consulted with you on a case that we had a house just like you read in the books or see in the movies that was literally built on top of an Indian burial ground.
Yes, it was.
I asked you about doing things like what kind of things we could do to kind of like make peace and help settle things down for it. I remember it was a tobacco offering we did.
Yes, and you're right. It's like, yeah.
It almost turned
yeah,
out.
Yeah, we actually wound up calling in a traditional Seminole shaman. And because, you know, we were doing these different things and it was kind of working, but then it was, you know, getting a little worse every time it came back. And we finally called in the shaman and he, oh, yeah, we're going to take care of it. And boom, he did like this 3-day long thing. And, you know, we were all exhausted at the end, but that was it. It was done, which was phenomenal.
And I think, unfortunately, in our situation, it, after the whole thing we did, the family decided that they missed the activity a little bit and decided to bring it all right back in again.
So, oh, I love those.
So, we actually had called more people out. I know John Zaffis came down here and Denise Jones and gave us a hand. I think that was
John is great. I love John.
And he actually told them he could solve their problem. Told them to move out and burn the house down.
That sounds
how,
like John.
They were actually to the point where, I mean, there was really bad things going on in the sense that personality changes, and really just the family was totally dysfunctional by this point. Yet they still were curious after the stuff left of where it went and is it still hanging around. So they actually got a Ouija board and.
Oh,
something back up, and of course it came back a lot worse than it was before. And so when he came down, he was trying to deal with them and saw what kind of people they were dealing with. He basically said, "Look, you know, there's if you're not gonna, we're gonna tell you what to do. If you're not gonna follow that, then you might as well just burn the house down and move because it's the only way you're gonna get rid of the problem."
Yeah, this is. I mean, John is so straightforward. I mean, he just, you know. I love John, and this is one of the, you know, the other things, you know, a lot of groups don't understand that you're not just a ghost hunter or a paranormal investigator. You're a nursemaid, you're a babysitter, you're a spiritual advisor, and, you know, when these people say, well, I kind of like the haunting that's going on, but can you get rid of the bad one and keep the good ones? No. It's all or nothing, and if you want them to stay, you better call in somebody else because we don't play that game, you know. And excuse me, when this is one of the things that I actually learned from you very early on. The psychology that you have to deal with when you're dealing with these clients is so razor's edge. You know, if you walk in to a client's home. And you've done the initial investigations, you realize that you have, let's say, a non-human entity that you're dealing with. If you sit down in the kitchen with this lovely little family and you say, you have an evil demon in your house, these people's heads are going to blow off and spin around, they're going to start packing their stuff, and that's it. That's the end of it. You're never going to hear again until somebody else moves into that house. If you walk into that same setting and you say you have a negative, non-human presence in your home, they're going to think, okay, I can deal with this. What's the next step? It's a fine line, but it's what you got to do.
Now, do you find yourself dealing with that, you know, quite a bit?
Non-humans? Oh, I'd say about 6% of the cases we work here are non-human. About 2% have been demonic. And that's out of every case we've worked, we've only worked 2 demonic cases, and I am quite thankful for that.
Yeah.
That we've only worked 2.
This is the beginning.
They're not fun.
Back in the day, definitely times are changing. I hear there's an upswing everywhere with this stuff.
Yeah, most of what we deal with non-human are elementals. You know, we get a lot of hurricanes here, and perfect example. We worked a case up in Jacksonville after a hurricane had come through, and a tree had fallen from one guy's yard across another guy's house and taken out part of this guy's second floor bedroom. Well, of course, what's the first thing you do? You get out there with the chainsaw, you cut up the tree, and you repair your house, okay? Guy didn't know that this was a tree that was very sacred to Native Americans. It's called a yew tree. So we go up there, we start the investigation, and 3 months in, he finally tells us about this tree. And we had documented some very crazy stuff in the house, excuse me, and in the yard. So when he finally tells me this, I says, okay, common sense, okay, let's go get one of these trees, we'll get a sapling, plant the tree, and, you know, verbally say out loud, you know, I'm sorry about the old tree, but, you know, it was the hurricane thing here. I'm planting this new tree for you, and you need to take care of it. You know, and he went through this whole big spiel, and guess what? All the activity in the house stopped. You know, I don't know why, but it worked, and I'm thankful for it.
Sometimes it's a simple fix, you know? But it's, mm-hmm. it's to think through that, and that's something that you're not going to get off of watching, you know, a season of TV shows. You're going to
that's for sure.
We all learn that's from for our sure. mistakes, and we all learn from each other. There's always someone else that you can always call in, and they don't have to be doing it as long as you, but just a different perspective.
Exactly.
Just to, you know, help you along. You need something to bounce off of that is outside your immediate group. And that's what's nice to have the little, you know, those of us that have been around for a while, I think we all still have that. We know that there's people out there, should we need to ask a question, that they're going to be
ready. Oh, that is, you know, foremost, because, I mean, especially these days, you know, and now I'm going to get in trouble again.
You know.
You know, a lot of people coming into the field these days, they don't understand that there is a difference between being a ghost hunter and being a paranormal investigator. Being a paranormal investigator is a lot more tedious and detailed than being a ghost hunter. Ghost hunter, and this is definition, everybody can look it up. It's, you know, in tons of books and all over the web and everything, which, by the way, Shadowlands rocks. I send so many people there, you know, for the articles and stuff. Your writing amazes me, and it's so spot on. I love your page.
It's not going to fail.
Pages. My gosh. How long have you had that up? Like 15, 16 years?
In 1994. It
wow. That's awesome. That's awesome.
And I'm glad it's still a struggle to keep it going, but that's, I know that even if it's just one person a year that can get something good out of that and it helps them, that's worth it in itself.
Yeah, I get a lot of people on the tour, you know, I'm from, you know, blah, 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 Wisconsin, got this going on, you know, how can I find a group? And, you know, I don't tell them, oh, go on the internet. I tell, go to the Shadowlands, you know, because there's so much information there, you know, and sometimes it works out that it's, you know, I don't know, squirrels living in their attic or something, so, but, okay, ghost hunter and paranormal investigator. Ghost hunters hunt for ghosts in known haunted locations, historic buildings, public parks. Good example here is the Castillo de San Marco, the Spanish fort up in St. Augustine. And then paranormal investigators investigate purported hauntings in locations that aren't historically documented to have paranormal activity. So you've got to do the historical background, the interviews, you know, the whole nine yards. You're not just going to go out there with a K2 meter and a digital camera and go, hey, I got an orb, you know.
Right.
My opinion, anyhow.
I agree with you 100%. That definition is never really made clear either. I'm not knocking the shows. The shows have done a lot of positive things. They've made people aware that we are out there and that there's normal people doing this.
Right.
And there's a lot of good things that come from them, too. I think being in the field, we might be just a little more critical of them because we're doing it and we see the other result. Because we're seeing the people
who
don't know what they're doing. But I think that with anything you do, I'm sure somewhere there is somebody who watches someone put a roof on on TV and then goes out and tries to do it themselves. I mean, just,
oh yeah, I saw that guy when I was in the hospital a couple of weeks ago. He's got two broken legs and a piece of roofing material through his forehead. Sorry. Well, it's like, you know, we've been members of the Taps family for forever, way before the guys ever got on television, you know. And again, I understand.
We were all listed. There was a bunch of us that listed before they even had the Taps family.
Yeah, exactly.
We were on the page. I can't remember how they listed us. Something was like consultants or something like that, or additional Taps friends or something. But that was like, I guess we were kind of like just grandfathered into the Taps family.
Right. We're what they call a bronze level member now. It's all gotten so convoluted. And, you know, I've talked to Jay and Grant about this stuff this past year for the first time. And this is something we've done ever since I started the research group. You know, we do background checks on all potential new members, you know, and Taps all of a sudden comes in this past year and says, oh, you got to send us, you know, all the time. What? Just now you're thinking of this? I don't know. And it's not, I know it's not a lot of Jay and Grant, you know, but the one thing that really bothers me, and this could be with any show, remember, I don't have television. You know, but the first couple of seasons of Ghost Hunter, which, of course, I bought on DVD, every time they would walk up to a client's house, this was before the battleships and before the, I don't know, castles in Scotland and everything, the first thing that Grant would say to them is, hi, my name's Grant Wilson, I'm here to help. They haven't said anything like that in the last two seasons, and that bothers me.
You know, it's, I think it's turned more into, when you, once you get past the first couple seasons, you've pretty much seen all there is to see of basic ghost hunting.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have to do more, and you're kind of at the producer and the production company and the TV.
It's entertainment now.
Yeah, they're not looking at it from a professional level. They're looking at it
exactly. You know, and like I said, don't get me wrong, I love the guys. Donna is, you know, one of my best friends. They're all great people. They're wonderful. But it, like any other television show, it's entertainment. And they did. They broke the ground. You know, they brought it out and said, hey, this is us. This is what we do. Here's, you know, and I... This is one of the things I love. My my sister Colleen was just down visiting with her fiance, and we were talking on the phone, setting up a time to get together, and I hear him in the background. She has to prove to me that there are such things as ghosts, and without missing a step, I said, no, I don't. Not my job, you know? And how many times do you get this, Dave? You know, I want you to show me a ghost. Well, in all the time you've been doing this, how many times have you actually physically seen a once-living human or animal spirit?
Are you asking me directly? I might be a rare exception.
Well, yeah, because you... yeah, okay, you may be the exception.
But it's, believe me, it's not all it's cracked up to be, but I understand.
No, exactly.
That they were visual. We need to have, because I know just from even the website, the Shadowlands website, where we have the photo galleries, EVP galleries and stuff, I can see the traffic, where the traffic goes, and they would honestly rather look at orbs than listen to some EVPs, and it boggles my mind because that's the much better evidence, but it's still a visual thing.
Yeah, exactly.
And again,
I know this is hugely controversial in the field, and this is just my opinion, okay? Orbs. Hello. There are people out there, okay, one of the big catchphrases is you have to be an open-minded skeptic. Well, if you say that orbs aren't something that's paranormal, and we're not talking ghosts. There's a ton of stuff that falls under the paranormal umbrella. If you say that orbs are only dust, pollen, snow, whatever, that's kind of closing your mind to that whole open-minded skeptic thing. This is just my opinion, okay? Basic physics dictates energy doesn't die, it only changes form, okay? Human beings, animals, trees, whatever. We are all made up of, I'll go with humans and animals, minerals, energy, and water. So when we pass away, okay, if we choose to remain or get stuck behind, the easiest form for that energy to take in basic physics is a sphere or a ball. And I'm not saying every single orb is a once-living human or animal spirit. That's impossible. I mean, I've seen pictures where there's 200 orbs in a 10 by 10 square foot area. There's no way, okay? But there, in my opinion, there is a very small percentage of them that could be once-living human or animal spirit in nature.
I wholeheartedly agree with that. I don't count orbs as great evidence because
right.
There is so many. Most people, when they look at the pictures, they don't know, have any idea what they're looking at, and some of them are so close that it's hard to discern. But we know
right.
By looking at the infrared videos, we're catching them now on the infrared modified cameras and the full spectrum cameras. This is not dust, so there is something else out there. So it cuts both ways. You have people that are just orb fanatics, and they see faces in all the orbs, and orbs are
right. Exactly. You know, let's blow it up 500 times so we can
exactly.
See the smiley face in the pixels.
I got news for you. If I if that's my what's going to come to, I'm going to wind up being a smiley face on a ball of light floating around. Life at all? Because that's not
well,
exactly paradise.
I'll tell you, the one that changed my mind, because, you know, we used to not use orbs as evidence for anything because they were so controversial. But there's one on our website, which, sorry, shameless plug, dbprginc.org. It's of Brownie the Town Dog. And this one changed my mind. And I know the whole pixelization thing and all of that, but we compared a newspaper from 1954, a photograph that was in the local paper of this dog's face to this orb, and it's like, whoa. I've had tons of people in the field look at it and go, well, I don't want to say that it is, but, you know, and it's like, yeah, okay, gotcha.
Right.
It's just a questionable photo, you know, that you go, wow, okay, you know. But I had one person. anyhow, I had sent a photo to him early on, and I was told that it's not orbs in St. Augustine. It's a very special dust that only blows through St. Augustine. So if you ever go to St. Augustine, watch out for that very special dust that blows through there.
Maybe we can capture some in jars and sell it.
There, see?
I can't even. If I just ran down the list of the most ridiculous questions we get,
yeah,
it would be. I could do a whole show just on that.
Oh, I know. And this is one of the quote unquote peers in the field too. I was whatever.
And again, that's it, there's just no open mindedness there. And it's amazing that people can be in this field of all fields and still be so close-minded and, you know, make a decision. I mean, we have theory. We have theory and conjecture.
Thank you.
You have to be open. I know my beliefs and things I did from when I first started, some of them I've done a complete, you know, turnaround on because I found out that I was doing stuff that now I think was wrong or what I thought was something. Like, I thought orbs or something different at the beginning, and now I've changed my mind over years. I mean, everything, you have to be able to adapt as you learn things.
Exactly. Yeah. The theory, see, I had an interesting discussion with a friend of mine about the whole, you know, expert in the field thing. And I'm sorry, I still cannot label myself as being an expert. Do I have more experience than other people? Yes. To me, the word expert means that you can prove a theory. And that's, like you said, all we have, theories and conjecture. And until we can prove something in this field off of the theories that we have, I am not sticking that word onto who I am and what I do.
There are no experts. And that's,
thank you.
Although people will put that title on themselves, and I think that just makes them look foolish. We are all students and teachers. You know, depending on the day, the subject, and who you're with. And again, it has nothing to do with the length of time you've been doing this. Someone who just starts out might point something out that you suddenly, the light bulb goes off and you see.
Exactly. Or anything else for that matter. Right. Who is that guy? He just won the Pulitzer Prize for math and turned the prize down for like the third time. Now, this guy, I would call him expert in mathematics. He won the Pulitzer Prize 3 times. Yeah, okay. But anything else, we're all students of life. You know, you can have 12 million degrees on your wall all the way up to, you know, post-juris whatever, you know, doctorates, all that stuff, and you're still going to have something to learn.
Yeah, we're always learning. That's never going to end. Exactly.
Okay, I've got a question for you and your listeners. Why are cemeteries so haunted? Nobody died there.
Here's my theory, and it's kind of like twofold. First off, especially I guess it's around almost anywhere. There were settlements, the early towns, and everything. There was a lot of land to choose from for a lot of these older cemeteries. Why did they pick the place they did? And I don't know about in Florida, but there are some, especially in Pennsylvania and northern New Jersey, there are some really crazy places they put cemeteries on sides of hills, you know, in areas where there's flooding, areas that would have been, and when they're maybe a mile down the road, there was open land at the time that was perfectly flat and would have been much better. But something drew them to that particular spot. I think it's almost like that, what the Native Americans would believe, that it was sacred ground, they feel the energy, and that's kind of what drew them, and maybe that draws the spirits there too. And that's kind of like the spiritual version of it. That practical version, I think, is depending on what your belief system is, and this will vary from cemetery to cemetery, but to use, say, like a devout Jew for an example, they believe when they die, they are going to basically go to sleep, and they're going to have their body physically resurrected at the final judgment.
Right.
So in their case, it would behoove them to stay close to their body. So it all depends, I guess, on, you know, say you're an atheist, and all of a sudden you get that uh-oh moment. You're not really going to know where to go.
Right.
You know, like decide the closer to your body, the better. I mean, you're not going to really have any idea what to do, so who knows where you're going to do. I think that plays a lot into it too, the belief system that's behind it. And maybe if it's a grave that's visited a lot, and the energy that's there from the family and the mourning and the love that's there, that might attract them in too. Because I don't believe every cemetery is haunted.
No, I don't either. I know a lot of these abandoned and neglected cemeteries that we adopt and restore are, and that's one of my theories, is that they basically get very upset that nobody's taking care of them. And I believe, this is, again, just personal belief, that we can travel back and forth, check up on family, see old friends, whatever. And I don't think that's the case for every spirit, but I think some can. And like you were saying, you know, here's this, you know, gazillion acres of property in the middle of, you know, wherever. And I think that possibly it was the spiritual leader of the community job, so to speak, to find where it would be best to put the residents to rest. So he'd kind of, you know, walk around or cruise around on his horse, and, you know, he'd go, okay, this area over here feels like, okay, good place for the cemetery. You know, this place over here feels like, da, 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 da. Oh, we better put the tavern over here, you know. And I think that that's probably a part of it back, you know, in colonial times and into the 16, 17, 1800s. Because here's one a lot of people don't know. The difference between a graveyard and a cemetery is graveyards are next to churches, cemeteries are freestanding. And then my other theory is that when you pass away, if you choose to remain behind or get stuck behind, especially if you get stuck and you don't know what's going on, you know, you're in the emergency room and, you know, you're like hanging out outside your body going, wow, what's going on? Next thing, you know, you're at the funeral parlor and then they're taking you to the cemetery. You're going to hang with your body because you don't know what's going on. And I think that's part of it, is that, you know, a lot of them just, they don't realize and they just hang with their body.
While we're talking about cemeteries, we also wanted to talk to you about the International Association of Cemetery Preservationists. You were involved with that. Were you involved with forming that, too?
I'm getting, like, really crazy kind of feedback here, Dave.
So, and I'm not sure where that's coming from. Can you hear it any?
Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. We're trying to
see if we can reduce that just a little bit.
I can kind of hear you. There's like just some really weird feedback all of a sudden. And I think you were asking me about, oh, wait a minute. If I stand right here, there's no feedback.
Okay. You good? Okay.
I won't move.
I think it's my headset, actually. I just adjusted some control.
Oh, okay. I think you asked about the cemetery preservation group.
Yes.
Okay. Again, you know, this is something I've been interested in pretty much my entire life. My first experience with a close personal death was when I was 3. It was my father's mother. And then it was every couple of years up until this past November. Either a close family member or a friend, someone I was either, you know, my fiance or husband, whatever. And it literally has been every 2 to 3 years since I was 3. So, you know, while it's something that, you know, early on I really didn't understand, it's always been something I've accepted. And when I was 10, I was walking home and I kind of took this shortcut through the woods. I'm originally from Long Island, so, you know, same kind of environment as you're from up there.
Uh-huh.
And I came across this little cemetery, and there were only maybe, you know, 10 or 12 headstones. And the first one I came through was very standard Victorian era child's headstone with the little lamb on the top, but it was Christianized Native Americans. And the thing that struck me was the epitaph on this little girl's headstone. It said, "Mother and father, do not weep, for I am not dead. I am only asleep." And I literally stood there for half an hour just looking at this headstone. And then I finally, like, realized my surroundings, and there were, you know, graffiti on some of them, and you could tell the teenagers were, you know, hanging out and doing bonfires and, you know, drinking and all that. So I went home and I asked my dad, I said, "Look, if I get all my chores done, you know, on Saturday, can I go over to this place and, like, clean it up?" And, "Oh, yeah, that'd be great, okay." You know, and that was it. I mean, ever since then, I've just found crazy old cemeteries and, tried to fix them up. And it's, unfortunately, they're low man on the totem pole, so to speak. They don't fall into the finances of most municipalities. Most of them, especially here, ones that are visible, actually get to be on the finances and be mowed twice a year. Nothing as far as, you know, fencing or security or, you know, repairs, anything like that.
So much for perpetual care, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Well, the statistic there is 30 years after a cemetery sells the last plot, it'll go bankrupt and become abandoned. And 40 years after you're laid to rest in a cemetery, no one will come and visit you again until, you know, some crazy ancestor 100 years from now is doing a, you know, genealogical chart or something. And unfortunately, the two prime pieces of real estate in any given location for a developer are golf courses and cemeteries. Cemeteries that are closed and abandoned for more than 20 to 30 years that are owned by a municipality, they see the chance to make a ton of money. And they do. They'll sell them off.
Wasted. That's how they look at it.
Yeah, it's...
We got a question from the chat room here. Jimmy has been bitten and pinched more in children's areas of cemeteries than in the adult areas.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever had any instances of... You've ever encountered anything, you know, more on a negative side in some of the cemeteries you've been in? And was it any...
Oh, yeah.
Areas?
There's, again, I think it falls into the fact that these places have been, you know, so abandoned and neglected. And we had the perfect example, Mr. Franzik in one of our cemeteries, somebody actually broke out the entire end of his above ground vault, which was made with brick like they used to do in the during the Confederate War. They pulled his iron casket out, busted it open, stole his war medals from World War I, and then crushed them in the driveway. Now, if that was me, I'd be pretty pissed off. And he has been known, at least we think it's him because he's always hanging around that particular area. When trespassers come in, he'll stall their car. They'll get flat tires. The whole area around his burial site gets extremely hot. But where the children are, those are known as baby land. They're usually up against one of the property lines because, unfortunately, children take up less space. Some cemeteries keep them at the center, which I think is pretty cool. I've never experienced anything negative with any of the children's areas, but a lot of sadness, and I think that's not so much coming from the children as it is from their family members, and of course my being a mother. You know, you look at these babies that didn't have a life, and it just, you know, it breaks your heart.
There's only a few cemeteries around here that I've done over the years that I know definitely had children's sections. But there's one nearby here, and it was a Catholic cemetery, and you could see that they were some of them were just days old and or months old, and we finally realized that they were the ones that unbaptized babies because they were segregated by a wall.
Yeah.
And there was another cemetery that I did that had a specific children's section. And I pretty much got the sadness more than anything else. And I know a couple of people had a hard time. They had to walk away picking up on the sadness. I have had my share of little things happen in the cemetery. Sometimes you have some of the more negative spirits like to hang out there. It could be this coincidence that it happened to be, that Jimmy, in her case, maybe when she was near the kids' area, she became more vulnerable due to the maybe an emotional reaction to seeing the kids' graves. and something to decide to take a take the opportunity to scratch her or do something just to because her defenses were down a little bit. That would make perfect sense to me because that's the times that when I've had something happen to me in the cemetery. I've had somebody felt like someone whacked me in the back of the head with a baseball bat, but it was a time that I let my emotions get away, control a little bit, and angry.
If you don't mind me asking, does she have children?
I'm not sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes, she does.
Yeah.
So that might have been just the maternal instinct right there, and feeling that that would be enough, maybe to bring the defenses down slightly, just to, so someone could take a swipe at you to let you know, hey, we're around. And you
the first, I don't even know how many times that I had to deal with baby land, especially in one of the cemeteries we have, I couldn't even walk up to the entirety of it. And, you know, finally, I just came to the decision that this is not going to be the saddest place in this cemetery, you know. So we got little toys and a Jesus Loves Me sign and some pinwheel flowers and stuff, and we put them all against the fence. And, you know, a lot of these kids didn't have headstones. They just had the metal funeral home markers. So we got them headstones and, you know, cleaned the area up. I just beautifully, it was the only spot we put actual sod in, you know, and took, I don't want to say better care of it than the adult areas, but technically we did. And I started getting letters and phone calls from the parents and the grandparents of these kids, and they were like, you know, you finally made this to where I can get out of my car and go see my child or my grandchild. But I think, you know, with Jimmy, that has, it's a lot to do with it because, you know, we let our guard down when we get emotionally moved by something, especially in a cemetery, you know, or we don't know the backstories on a lot of these folks. Unless you're me and you go and you figure who everybody is out and what they did in life, but
you're just going above and beyond what, you know.
I know, yeah. People think I'm insane, but that's okay.
That's wonderful to hear. I mean, you are like a shining example of the best field.
Yeah, well, thank you. Now,
even outside of doing the investigations, there's so much more that we can give back to the community, and you're like a perfect example.
Yeah, I tell you, that's one of our rules, and a lot of new potential members don't get in because of it. You know, these guys have to donate an afternoon a month in the cemetery, clean it up, and, you know, whatever I need them to do. And if you miss three times a year, you're out of the group. And a lot of people go, oh, well, you know, it's a Sunday and it's, you know, football season. Well, you're not in my group. If I can work five jobs and the research group and the cemetery group and still find time to come out here and do this on top of, you know, being a mom and owning the house and fostering dogs, then you can find 2 hours a month to come out here, too.
Okay.
Off my soapbox. The backstory, you know, on a lot of these people, unfortunately, is not, you know, oh, they just, you know, they died, you know, or it was yellow fever or smallpox or something. We've got one, I can't remember her name offhand, but she was just over 2 years old. And unfortunately, she got run over. And when the car came to a stop, she was grabbing in the air for her mother. I actually spoke to her mother. This is how I know the gory details of this one. And which is what, when you said scratches, that's what made me think of this particular kid. It could have just not been an angry thing. It could have just been a child reaching out for a mom.
In desperation, almost, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a good. There's so many ways of looking at it. You just never know. That's a perfect point. Let's see. Jimmy's got another question here.
Okay.
Went to a VA cemetery. Mm-hmm. And just basically she was scoping it out, looking for where she would be buried. And she got really attacked by a veteran. Again, it's, I mean, what you, the point you just made is perfect. We don't know the frame of mind of the spirit at the time.
What was...
I would assume...
What did Jimmy do when she was in the service? Tell her she can type it in. I'm looking at the chat room. You know, again, let's say, for argument's sake, okay, she was bomb squad. let's say, and this is just a hypothetical, that she was a medic and someone, you know, got gut shot. They don't, you know, there's priorities. I don't know if you ever saw Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah.
The beach in Normandy. I mean, what a wake-up call to how many Americans about what those men actually went through. But when the medics were going down the line, you know, the guy was going, priority. You know, he can wait. This one's too far gone. You know, if you're in a situation like that, and you say, this one's too far gone, that person hears you.
Yes.
You know, so again, wow, not cool, but cool, Jimmy. Thank you for your service. And what an interesting job. I just watched a movie called Hurt Locker that, again, just woke me up to what these bomb squad people do. And again, this is an even simpler one. My dad was in the Navy. You know, you talk to people, Army Rangers, and they go, Navy? Yeah, you boys are great, but, you know, when we need a ride somewhere, other than that, you're a bunch of, you know. Same thing, Marines. Marines look down on pretty much everybody. And Air Force, oh my God, I don't know of any other branch except Coast Guard. You know, they all make jokes about Air Force. So it could have been something simple as that. You know, if she's in the Army and they were a Marine, it could have been just somebody going, get off of my area, man. You know, military people are so, they're different. They're trained to be different. They think differently than we do. My dad was career Navy, and I tell you what, you know.
Through something, you know, they could have been, you know, killed in battle. They could have had, you know, the post-traumatic stress.
Mm-hmm.
It's something after that. I mean, there's so many different ways. So it's a hard one to pin down. But there's there's so many different reasons for a spirit to lash out like that.
Exactly.
Questions. Sometimes you just never know the answers to why. So things like that are hard to prevent when you don't know exactly kind of what provoked them. If you're just walking around minding your own business, that's why, you know, that's something they don't show you on TV either. You kind of need to be, you know, prepared for anything and on your toes and be paying attention because something could happen at any time, even if it seems like a nice, peaceful cemetery.
Yeah, and this also goes for, you know, in your cases, again, the psychology. You're not just dealing with, let's say again, intelligent haunting. You're not just dealing with a once-living human spirit here. You're dealing with a person.
Right.
And just because this person doesn't have a body anymore doesn't mean that he or she should be treated as an object. It's still a person. And the hard part, and, you know, I don't know if being an empath or, I don't know, my schooling, my life experience, I don't know what it is, but to be able to by what's going on in the environment and the home, try to figure out who this person was and why they're doing what they're doing, you know, helps a lot with figuring out how you're going to help this family and help handle the situation and help this person cross over, be where they need to be. One of the examples that I use with clients is, because they don't, you know, you've got to explain, you know, residual, intelligent, all of that. Because, you know, if you're dealing with a residual haunting, you know, you're stuck watching the movie, you know.
Exactly.
But if you're dealing with an intelligent haunting, and it, the haunting itself, the activity is getting worse and worse and worse, it's not because they're an angry person. It's, for example, you're standing, you're them, you're standing in the middle of Madison Square Garden, and there's all these people around you, but nobody's noticing you. So you start talking as loud as you can. Nobody's paying attention. You start screaming. Still, nobody's paying attention. You pick up a metal chair. You start banging it on the floor. Nobody's paying attention. Your next step is to start yanking somebody's hair as they walk past. That's what the client is going to deal with if they don't get a handle on it.
That's a really good analogy.
Thank you.
Well, we've ran over our time. They let us continue a little bit just because...
Oh, my gosh. I didn't even notice the time.
But it was very nice having you on the guest. It was nice finally talking to you after all these years.
Yeah, I had a great time, and I appreciate you having me on the show.
So thank you very much.
No, thank you. And if you ever need me again, just give me a call or an email, and please thank Jimmy. She was awesome in getting everything going. And, oh, is that Tina? It is.
Yes, it is.
Hi, Tina.
She was our very first guest last week, or 2 weeks ago for the show.
Oh, awesome.
She had similar problems connecting like we did tonight, so.
Oh, it'll work out.
I'm sure.
Everything technological always eventually does.
Practice makes perfect, so.
There you go. All right, Dave, and all your listeners, thank you very much for having me and putting up with me, and I appreciate the airtime.
You're welcome. It was great having you on.
All right. Good night.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll see you again in 2 weeks, hopefully right on time this time. Keep our fingers crossed. Thank you, and good night.